This one's called The Meditation, and it deals with a book written by Billy Meyer. This information is not from the Pleiades, I guess you could say that, and that Billy wrote this book on his own. Much of the information in this book is founded on his travels when he was younger through India, his many, many years of studying meditation and meditation practices. The information in here also has been collaborated by the Pleiadians, and he has discussed this information with Sannyasi and some of the others. But for the most part, this book deals with Billy's ideas on what meditation is and how to use it and why you should use it. So I thought we'd spend a little bit of time on this tape, and I'll explain to you as much as possible, the time allows here, about what's in the book, an explanation of it, because the book was written in German. It was translated a few years ago by Roberta Brooks, but unfortunately it's no longer on the market and it's not obtainable. But it does contain a lot of really valuable information about meditation itself, because there's a lot of confusion about meditation. To most people, the uninitiated, it sounds like something that some Eastern guru may do, or you probably have to wear a white robe and sit on a hilltop in India to meditate. To most of people, especially in America, mainstream America, meditation isn't something they even understand. And I think if you ask most people to define what it is, they wouldn't know. They would probably think you had to align yourself with some sort of belief structure or philosophy, mostly Eastern, before you could use meditation. That it's probably some process of a thinking type. Well, it's actually not. It's nothing mystical. It's nothing magical at all. As we go through this, you'll see that it's simply nothing more really than it's just a method of controlling your thoughts so you can teach yourself self-knowledge, learn to understand all the factors of the material and of the spiritual self. You see, unfortunately, to many people, they're not even aware that there is a spiritual self. And through meditation, you can actually use this as an exercise, one, to find out you actually do have a spirit, and you can actually feel the force of it within yourself. And then you can learn to apply the logic of your meditative exercises to your daily life. This will actually cause personality change, calming down of the ego and emotions. There will be an increase in stability in your life, and you will be luckier, and things just kind of go your way. Probably its greatest benefit is just overall you're just more peaceful, and you have a much better understanding of yourself. The depth at which you would want to learn meditation and how far you want to carry it in your life is completely up to you. It requires no belief in any sort of belief system, structure, religion, or ideology. It's not necessary at all in order to meditate. As a matter of fact, a simple meditation can be nothing more than while you're sitting in a traffic jam on a freeway to just observe the gentle passing of your breath going in and out of your nose. That's meditation. It just calms you down and focuses your attention on something else. And just for a few seconds, you kind of float away and forget your problems of the day. So let me talk a little bit about meditation itself. And I'll explain to you a little bit about what's in the book and what you can learn from that. Okay? Meditation, to begin with, as described by Billy when he writes the book at the beginning of it, he calls it the teaching of powerful powerlessness. It's based on the absolute logic of the creation and its logic of sevenfold laws. It follows the natural development of the seven stages of development of human life. He again refers to that. Powerful powerlessness, interesting phrase. It means the liberation from illogical thinking and action. It means it's a certainty of logic. Now, powerful powerlessness, that sounds almost like a contradiction in terms there. This refers to a number of things. In simplest terminology, it just means letting go of your material senses a little bit and finding out that there's great power within you. So you become like a very powerful person through the powerlessness almost of your material self. As we discussed once before, an idea is the starting point of a deed or an action. Ideas can be formed into logical thoughts. And those can manifest themselves in as material eventually. That's possible. But an idea is always the starting point of a deed or an action that's going to follow shortly after that. If the idea is conceived of with truth and balance, then the idea will find its destiny with true value. That means, let's say, for instance, that you set an idea in motion and it's kind of a oddball idea. You suddenly decide that it would be a good idea to have a three-legged dog or something. Now, that idea may set you out on a path of genetic discovery, of mating dogs together with two-legged chickens or whatever to try things. The idea is that it was illogical to begin with, it was ill thought of, and it was a pretty silly idea. So it's never going to come to any good conclusion, is it? But if an idea is started from a point of truth, from a point of balance and understanding, if it's a good idea to begin with, in other words, if you set something in motion for the right reasons, then let it continue, that there's kind of a certainty to it, that logic then will unfold in a logical manner and something positive will actually come from it. That's something all of us have to learn more about. Starting ideas in motion for the right reasons and letting them happen. Getting out of the way, trying not to get in the way and impose your own will and value judgments on them. That's kind of what luck is. Luck, again, is a self-inflicted state caused by starting something in motion for the right reasons. And an important factor is to get out of the way of it. Once it does start in motion and things start do happening because one thing does lead to another, when that happens, you don't want to get in the way. Like taking credit for your luck. As soon as you start doing that and getting involved in the luck, what happens? The luck stops. Then suddenly you say, oh, you know, I guess I wasn't so lucky after all. Well, in effect, you just got in the way. Okay? If an idea is based on absolute accuracy of logic, then the deed or action must bring fulfillment to evolution in every respect. Now, this concept means that if you start something in motion, idea based on an absolute fact, for instance, like in physics, science, or math, if you would start something in motion, like E=mc², Einstein's theory of relativity, if that is an absolute fact, if it actually is, if you would start that idea in motion to a class of physicists, they would come to many different conclusions and findings and so forth based upon this factual knowledge that you started with. So the idea is if you start with a basic fact, an absolute fact, and let that fact continue in a logical fashion, then it must fulfill itself logically. That's just the way logic works. Thus, it's the powerful process of powerlessness, whereby the certainty of logic itself will cause a stipulated goal to be achieved. So in effect, we're going to set a thought in motion through a meditative exercise. This thought will be carefully thought out, researched, to the point where we know it's absolutely clear and logical. Then when we set that thing in motion, we know it's going to come to a logical conclusion correctly. So we have several things to deal with here. We're going to start talking about how we observe things, how we develop power, and how we develop these meditative exercises and mentally why we want to do that. Okay, what we're talking about now is this goal or this object, the thing that we're going to meditate on, can be obtained because of our logic. All right? Now, let's define a few terms. When we're going to meditate on something, we're not going to meditate just on nothingness. We're not going to sit there in a stupor and a blank mind. We generally meditate to cause something to happen. Originally, we're going to meditate just as a practice exercise, just to see if we can do it. And finding out once that we can do it, we'll get better at it, and then we'll get to a point where we decide, I guess this is kind of useful. I think I'll meditate on purpose to do something, like stop smoking, or cure bad eating habits, or perhaps maybe sleep better, something simple like that. Later on, we might want to do more important things, correcting personality flaws, looking into ourselves deep and introspectively, and making major changes in our personality. All of these things can be obtained through the meditative exercise. So there's a variety of things that we can do with it. If an idea is formed within the spirit based on wisdom resulting from facts, it is determined that the goal must be obtained in a natural form of powerlessness with an absolutely logical fulfillment, Billy says. Okay? So if there's a determination to reach a goal with the help of this absolute logic, a spiritual force, then, is created inside of us by virtue of this meditative exercise that we're going to learn about. That way, the application ensues in kind of an absolute powerlessness, because there's no compulsion on our part to make the event happen. In other words, we're going to set something in motion because it's correct, because we've absolutely worked it out, it's logical. will set it in force. The power of our spirit will more or less take over, ensuring that this logic continues. And we offer no compulsion of any kind to be involved in the outcome of that logic. In other words, we do not, we're not going to coax our spirit into the conclusion of this logic. Well, the force is created through the known accuracy of logical consistency, cause and effect. It's just simple standard logic. If you set something in motion for the right reasons, it will come to a logical conclusion. So we're dealing here then with a form of balance. If we refer back to our little chart we talked about earlier of the mind, where we had the material side and the spiritual side, you might want to get out that and kind of reflect on that as we go through this conversation about meditation, because it certainly involves many of the factors that are going on in there. When you have a thought, for instance, a thought may be a very positive thought, it may be a very negative thought, or maybe right in balance. In the beginning stages of development of the evolution of a spiritual person, most of their thoughts are going to be wildly negative or wildly positive, because they have very little information about things. And our beginning selves in our early days when we were primitive, we probably, you know, the ideas that we would start coming up with when we begin to reason and think and so forth, were probably very, very negative or positive. As we become more evolved and we become more reasoning with power, we become more intellectual, where we learn more and gather more wisdom in our spirit and begin to deal with life with more wisdom and knowledge, then we are less negative and less positive, and ultimately we deal with almost everything from a balanced point of view, where we don't offer a negative view on things or a positive view on things, but we can remain in a balanced state, which means kind of like a neutral state viewpoint on things, and then we perceive the world as exactly as it is all of the time, without imposing any of our so-called positive attitudes or negative attitudes on it. So becoming a neutral thinker is really kind of an evolution of gaining wisdom, of gaining personal freedom from illogical thinking that's in the world. It's the discovery of balance or neutral thinking within oneself. You know, we mentioned on our little diagram of the material and the spiritual that we gather information all the time with our material senses, right? We bring things in. And then we form kind of an attitude, you know, about them when they first come in. We immediately check with our subconscious and to see if we have any data on this. We might even check, you know, deep thinking with our psyche to get a feeling about this, whatever. And then all of this information then has to kind of filter through our emotions and our attitudes, you know, all this programming we build up in our material self, what we think about things, you know. Maybe you see somebody wearing a really ridiculous-looking pair of shoes. They seem ridiculous to you. And maybe they've got little bells on them and they're pink and, you know, there's a picture of a bird flying on them or something, something which you regard as rather silly. So you have an opinion, an attitude. Suddenly you think this person wearing these boots, immediately you think there's something wrong with them just because of what they're wearing. Well, we do this all the time. My point is that simply being very material creatures, we program ourselves and we fall into these traps all the time of dealing with information and making judgments about life based on all these little pre-programmed attitudes and feelings that interfere with our ability to perceive life exactly as it really is. Now, what are the drawbacks to that? If we don't perceive things properly, then after a while we develop kind of an attitude where everything looks the same, you know, where we're just angry about everything or we have a negative attitude about everything. Have you ever met someone like that? Where I knew a guy once that all the time he'd be watching television and he disagreed with everything. That commercial's terrible. God, what an ugly person to sell that product. I wouldn't buy that product at all. Or this TV show's terrible. Everything was a negative viewpoint. This person, and if you talk to him, you find out about all the problems that he's having in life and so forth. This is a very angry fellow, very angry young man who now, because of all of his emotional problems and attitudes that he's programmed himself with, that every bit of information that comes into his world now, he has a negative attitude to it. Not even a really positive attitude. I don't think this particular person I'm thinking about I've ever even heard a positive statement from, let alone a balanced or neutral thinking things. So this meditation is the process of powerful powerlessness. It's going to create a force of our spirit, and this is going to dominate the factors of our life. This force of spirit is what we're looking for. We're going to try to get away from dealing with everything, with our material feelings, our material senses all the time, and start using our spirit. And to do that, we created what is called the force of the spirit. You have a force of your material self. You have this big ego, this persona of self. Maybe you, when you stand up and speak to other people, you're very aggressive, or maybe you're an angry person, or maybe you're very soft, or maybe you're very tender, or whatever it is. But you have a persona about you. And for the most part, you're used to using that all of the time. It becomes a habit, and you deal with everything using just your material persona. So you greatly limit your view of the world. You limit your reactions, how you can possibly react to things in the world. And most importantly, you really limit your ability to grow. Okay, we're going to get more into that into a minute. There's two essential parts of meditation which are very important. One is the attention that you pay to the object you're going to meditate on, and the clarity of knowledge about it. Now let's define here what an object is, because I'm going to use this word a lot. An object of a meditation is whatever you're directing your meditative exercise towards. Let's say you just want to meditate on stop smoking. Okay, so the object now of our meditation is smoking. It's the object of whatever we turn our meditative attention to. And let's say for the sake of our discussion here for a while that we're going to meditate on stop smoking, all right? So there's two factors that deal with this meditation principle. The attention to the object of smoking, and the clarity of knowledge about what we learn about it. Okay? The main value of meditation in everyday life is the clear and keen observation of very small things leading all the way up to the highest possible goals we may want to obtain. So let me say that again. The main value of meditation in everyday life is the clear and keen observation, which leads, of course, to the awareness of small things all the way to the highest goal. So what we're going to learn to do now is to see things actually for what they really are. We're going to very purely observe things. And one of the first things I want to talk about now is the observation, the pure observation itself. You see, clear and keen observation is the observation of what's going on at the moment. Okay, let's say we'll relate that to smoking. And let's say I've got a pack of cigarettes here. I don't smoke, by the way, but let's say if I did, I had a pack of cigarettes here. And I look over at the pack of cigarettes, and immediately when I look at the pack of cigarettes, if I was a smoker, I remember when I did, my first reaction would be, sure, there's a little pleasure there. Sure would be nice to have a cig about right now. Because we have connected to these cigarettes all these great feelings of pleasure, right? So we think to ourselves, we've already taught ourselves that if I smoke, I'll feel better. If I smoke, I may look cool. If I smoke, I can use this as a crutch for a few moments while I'm nervous. If I smoke, it's right after dinner, I'll just enjoy the feeling I get from it. Or maybe I like the feeling of the smoke rolling up my nose or whatever. But we connect many different, you know, emotions and feelings to something that we do. So when we first, you know, observe this package of cigarettes, all these pre-programmed things are what's going to immediately run through our mind, right? Well, these are all material things that we have created. Someone who has never seen a package of cigarettes and has no idea what it is will not think of any of these things, will he? You see, someone, if we got them from, say, Planet 13 or something, and they came here and we showed them a pack of cigarettes, they wouldn't have any idea what it is. And they wouldn't have any emotional responses to it. They wouldn't have any feelings connected to it. And this is kind of what we're after, trying to get back to the ability to see things clearly as they are at the moment. It's the immediate perception, observation, and attentiveness of the human being that we're after, to be able to see things very clearly. See, the individual, we're only receivers, but we do not want to influence the object of observation through our own will, emotions, thought forms. We don't want to exert any influence on evaluating, which will lead to a reaction that we'll have to a product. When we see the cigarette, then, part of our meditative exercise would be to see it exactly just for what it really is. Okay? We're only after the pure facts, just the clean and pure observation of the object. So we would see it, we want to try to see that package of cigarettes again, just as if the guy, just the same way the guy from Planet 13 would. That, like, we don't even really know what it is. The first thing, all we would see was that it's a small box, and maybe it has some writing on it. We have no attachment to it whatsoever, okay? It's unavoidable at the beginning, though, when you start trying to learn to meditate, that you're going to, anytime you try to observe anything, some of your own evaluations and ideas and reactions are going to come into play. It's only a natural thinking, because our normal habits of thinking, we don't use concentration or observation very much, and it almost assures that a lot of strange thoughts and ideas are going to come into play. If you've ever tried to concentrate on any one thing for a length of time, even 10 seconds, you'll find out how very difficult it is to concentrate your thought on anything. We're not used to controlling, you know, there's no maintenance in our thought processes. We're not taught how to use our brain in this world. You know, some of us figure it out a little bit better and go to some classes for it, but for the most part, we're just like free thinking, random people with all sorts of thoughts, just rambling around in our head all the time. And I challenge any of you, unless you're to stop right now and try to concentrate on anything for 5 seconds without having another thought enter. Of course, if you're a practiced meditative person, then all this is already known to you, and you can probably do that. But this is what we're after. We're going to try to develop some powers of concentration so that we can not only observe something very clearly, that we can form in our spirit a logical, brand new thought all about this object that we're meditating on, and we'll put some force into that. Okay? And we'll learn then to concentrate on that particular object for long periods of time. And then a lot of wonderful things happen. Then our force of spirit develops, our abilities of concentration will increase. Okay? The amount of time that we spend on practicing the meditative exercise will depend, of course, you know, on how good you get at it and how clearly you can actually see things. When a person's value judgments, evaluations, and other reactions to an object emerge, we have to get in the habit of just like dashing them out of our mind, telling them they're not important so that the pure observation can dominate our actions. Once we do that, then very slowly there's this feeling of inner freedom about the object of our meditation. I'll tell you a little story. When I was younger, when I was learning to, I didn't even call it meditation. I just had a natural habit of how I would kind of like dream when kids do. And I had the little thing that I always did when I wanted to get thoughts out of my mind so I could go off into my little spirit world or other dimension world where I wanted to go all the time. I developed a little game I would play. And you might want to make up something similar to this. And this was a game or kind of a plan of action I would always go through so I could focus my attentions and learn to concentrate just on one particular thing. And what I would do then, I would imagine all of my daily problems, my thoughts and everything, I would see myself standing at a bus stop. I was the only one there. And I would tell myself that pretty soon a bus is going to be here and I'm going to load all of my problems, all of my thoughts, my material thoughts on this bus. And I'm going to send them on the bus, and the bus will be back in the morning. See, I would do this when I would go to sleep generally. And all these thoughts would be back in the morning, so I didn't have to worry about anything in my material world right now. It could be I would do this at sleep, or if I just wanted to, you know, drift out for 10 minutes and go somewhere. So here would come the bus. I'd see the bus coming and my thoughts. I would put all of my thoughts and feelings. I'd see them march right on the bus with little legs on them, all my problems about, you know, if it was a girlfriend or school or lunch or problem with the parents or whatever. I'd see it get right on the bus. And once it would get on the bus, I'd see it drive away. And I did this so many times that I had myself programmed that once the bus pulled away, I no longer had any connection to any of those thoughts. They would not come into my mind at all. Immediately then I would see myself walking into a theater. No one in the theater, just rows of seats there and a big blank screen. And I'd sit down in my seat right in the front row, right in the middle. This is my own theater. And the screen was my form of concentration. And when I was all calmed down, because there was no other thoughts in my mind now, they were all on the bus. And I got so good at it that my mind was almost blank at this point. I just sat in the chair. There was a big knob right in front of me. And when I was all ready, I would tell myself that I will now let go of my material self, and I am going to go into my spirit, and I'm going to observe whatever is on the screen. And I would see myself reach forward and turn the knob. And as I turned the knob, the screen, I would just wait. Whatever would come on the screen, I would just observe it. And for some reason, I seemed to know at an early age not to get involved in the screen, to just be an observer. I would never cause any images to come on the screen. And once they did come on the screen, because it will happen naturally, I would never get involved in what was going on in there. Occasionally I did. I mean, I was just a kid. I'd get into it sometimes. But for the most part, I was learning how wonderful it was to just watch the screen like a movie. I mean, things would happen, ideas and visions that come on this screen. I had no idea where they would come from. And I didn't know what I was really doing. I didn't realize that I was really like getting into my own spirit and allowing ideas from the past and the future and things that are within my own spiritual self to come forward on this screen. But I did seem to have the presence of mind somehow to know, even back then, not to get involved and not to cause things to happen on the screen. And once they did come on the screen, not to put any of my own material self into it, just to be an observer and watch. It was like watching a movie for the first time you go see it. You don't know what's going to happen next. And I would get into that mode. That's how I related it to a movie theater. Because in a movie, when you go see a film into a movie the first time, you don't know what's going to happen from scene to scene. You just observe it. You just watch. Of course, in a movie, you get all involved, you know, excited and so forth, and you see yourself as the hero or whatever after the bad guy. But, you know, but that's the general idea, that we want to observe things as they happen and learn to get ourselves in that position where we can get rid of all of our material problems, emotions and attitudes and things that bother us. So you may want to use a bus also, if you'd like. Of course, maybe you'd rather use a UFO and just have them fly off in a UFO. What happens is that once you practice this a little bit and you get in this habit of being able to feel this inner feeling of inner spiritual self coming along, this feeling you get when the material crap is all out of the way, well, there's a very familiar mental attitude that sets in, and you can call upon that easily. The more practice you get at it, you can call that feeling back. That place in your mind can come back very quickly, or it doesn't take you very long to get there. Pure observation, like what I'm talking about here, to purely observe and concentrate on something and to block out all other thoughts, obviously is not recommended for all life situations. This is the kind of exercise that you want to do on purpose at home when you're alone by yourself. It's certainly not something that you want to do in your day-to-day life. If you're out driving the car and you suddenly decide to meditate and concentrate on something, you're liable to go totally blank and run into a wall. If you're doing exercises or you're playing sports or something, you don't want to blank out just when the ball has been thrown to you. So it's not a practical thing to be doing during day-to-day words, deeds, actions sort of lifestyle. But the logic that you're going to learn from it can apply. Because as we talk more and more about this, we're going to learn a lot about ourselves and the logic that we learn about ourselves and the steps we use to create a meditative exercise can be very useful, though, in daily life. The process of observing serves us in many conditions in daily life, and that's very important. The pure observation is recommended really just as an exercise, I say. And it, to begin with, it can be just as simple as what I call sports meditation. It can be a very just easy, relaxing thing, doing nothing more than casually observing your breath just to calm down and relax. Okay, it's very good for that. I once had a job as a computer programmer working for a major company, and I had for about a year or so, I was in a very high-stress job, where there was an awful lot of work given to me that had to be done on a timely basis. And, you know, I had a lot of people under me that were waiting all the time for the results of my work. So I had a lot of stress, and there was more work than I could really get done. So I was always showing up a little early and pushing real hard. Consequently, I was so intent all the time on getting my work done that when it was time for lunch, I was so keyed up, I couldn't begin to hardly think about lunch. And once I finally did force myself to go get some food, I'd always bring it right back to my desk so I could go back to work. And then I'd find myself stuffing my face with a sandwich or whatever while I'm doing more work, trying to get it done over the lunch hour. Well, of course, this leads to a lot of problems. You don't chew your food at all. You don't even remember what you ate. You just kind of inhale it and swallow it, and you get stomach aches or whatever. But it's certainly not conducive to good eating habits. So what I developed was a little another little game, kind of like the bus deal, but I just saw myself, and I used the bus. I would see all my work problems, situations, and things that I had to get done, get on the bus. I would calm myself down, and I would use my screen. And on my screen, though, this time, I would always tell myself that the words relax, R-E-L-A-X, would come on the screen one word at a time, I mean one letter at a time, and they would go through a series of color changes, each letter. And it would take about 30 seconds for that entire word, relax, that go through the screen in different colors. And by the time it would get to the letter X at the end, I would be all calmed down. I would have forgotten all about my workload for the morning, and I could actually eat and enjoy my food. So it became handy then to use the logic of what I was doing, something practical right there. I have a few more things to explain to you about the psychology, I guess, or the logic of what meditation is, and then I'm going to walk you through a meditative exercise, explain exactly how to do it, and lead you through it so you can start getting on your own road to practicing these ideas. But I want to finish first for a little bit more here, explaining more about the concept of what meditation is, because it can be done improperly, and you can actually kind of harm yourself if you're not careful. Well, so far we've talked about the ability we need to observe things very clearly, right? Okay. Well, by observing things clearly, what we're doing is we're learning to concentrate on it and see it exactly for what it is. We need to develop a thoroughness of observation. This is very difficult and it takes a lot of work. But if you plan to have any kind of success at all with your meditation, you have to spend quite a bit of time at this level and invest a little in it, or things are just not going to develop. You have to develop the ability to clearly observe an object thoroughly and see it exactly for what it really is. Clear, absolute knowing and logic about what you are actually looking at. If it's a pack of cigarettes, or if it's a problem in life, or if it's a car, a person, whatever it is, we need to develop the ability to clearly see things exactly as they are. This requires that we observe that object without any kind of prejudice or emotion involved. Remember the process we talked about of how we gather information with our senses, with our sight, touch, taste, smell, and hearing, and so forth? Well, that's what we're used to doing. We're used to always seeing things, and we perceive what they are, and so forth, with our senses. And after we've seen something once or twice, we gather information about it. And then we have a known kind of library on it. We have an inventory of thoughts about something, like smoking. You know, people who are serious smokers, they could probably write down a whole page of ideas why it's good to smoke. All these pleasure things they get from them. And they develop more and more of them as they go along. They have to learn to turn that off, to shut that down. That's what we're going to do in meditation. So that for somebody who does smoke, they could start taking uses as a practice, take that practice of cigarettes, and begin to meditate and clearly see cigarettes for exactly what they are. Okay? Because if we allow all of our preconceived notions about something, our attached attitudes and emotions to an object, we're always going to fail in the meditative practice. We will never be able to develop our meditation on a thing if we do that. So our first practice then really is just to learn how to concentrate and clearly see something thoroughly. The pure observation of an object is merely the registration of that object, to see exactly where it starts and stops and exactly what it is. It's not easy, it's very difficult, but it's very important that you put the effort out to try it, to clearly see something and concentrate on it well, because once you do, you'll reach a small level of success. And once you reach that small level of success, you'll notice that you actually have some power, that you really do have a spirit, and that you start to get yourself somewhat in balance. Or not, your entire life is not actually controlled by your material self, and there's kind of a thrill involved there. And there's this feeling of personal power, that knowing that you can actually have some control over the physical world around you. It's obviously difficult because we're not used to clearly observing things. We rely all the time on our inventory of, preconceived notions and ideas about things, all of our judgments. It's really very rare when you start out meditating that you can actually concentrate on anything very long or see it very clearly. But that's what we're after. We have a habit, especially in our society, through advertising and everything else, we are taught. We are conditioned continually in TV and books and magazines and motion pictures and so forth to always have attitudes about things, because that's how they sell us products. And that's how they control us, even if it's an election. We just elected Bill Clinton president. And a lot of the election, as you can see, is through all the negative campaigning, is creating votes through fear and negativity and so forth. Well, that's a tried and true method. They know if you can rile people up and appeal, say things that cause them to attach anger and hostility to another candidate, that's how they'll see that individual. And when they go to the polls, they certainly won't vote for them because they've attached some of their bad feelings, their negative feelings, to that person, and it's been triggered by this other candidate. So more and more people are catching on to that, though, and I see it's very good that, you know, a lot of people are standing up to the negative campaigning, and it just didn't go well at all for Bush to do that this time. The next thing I want to talk about is what Billy calls the acquirement. And the acquirement, frankly, it's just to be able to acquire a pure observation of something. It's a word that he uses. See, if the material consciousness, which has control over the pure observation, is not strictly controlled by pure and clear attention, then when it passes the observation on to the spirit, it'll receive a distorted material view of the object, and your meditation has failed. You see, we're going to use our senses to originally perceive the object. Okay, let's say that pack of cigarettes again. So we're going to use our eyes, and maybe if there's a cigarette there smoking, we'd also use our nose. But we're going to use our eyes to observe it. We might even pick the package up and touch it and feel it a little bit. We might take a cigarette out and put it to our lips and taste the tobacco or whatever. So we can use our senses now to actually discover everything about this cigarette package. If we don't make any effort to clearly observe it, what are we going to do? We already have preconceived feelings all about it, all the things that we like about smoking. And when we attempt then to pass on our observation through the subconscious over into the subconscious of the spirit about all of our logic and knowledge we have about this cigarette package, what's going to happen? We're going to send it all of our negative information about it, all these preconceived notions of how wonderful smoking is and how great it is and how pleasurable and how we like it. Well, we don't gain anything, do we? So no meditative immersion is possible there. We gained nothing. Matter of fact, we kind of damaged ourselves because now we're beginning to train our spiritual self that it's good to smoke. So we really gained no ground there at all. So to acquire a pure observation is the task of sorting out the extraneous thoughts and unwanted thoughts and feelings so we do not pass them over to the spirit as our observation. The goal is to observe an object thoroughly and leave a state of mind that Billy calls the remaining at the body in contemplation of the body. This means that nothing else is in existence in your entire thought realm, no ego or anything, no mixing of thoughts except what we're supposed to be observing. When we get to the point where we want to pass on subconsciously our observations of this package of cigarettes, we want to pass over their strictly clear and keen observation of it. And again, our approach here would be much like someone who had never seen the package of cigarettes before. So what we would do is we would view that cigarette package, and we would look at it like it's a totally unknown object. And we would pick it up and look at it, feel it, feel the material, notice the cardboard or paper or however it's wrapped, and very small and minutely we would look at each detail of the package. And as a practice, you might spend 10 minutes observing everything about it, except that you just observe it. You don't make any judgments about it. You don't decide on if you like the plastic or the color is this, that, and the other. You just observe it, and you will see that things will come to you. The package will begin to almost speak out, and then you start forming a new thought about it that you pass on to the spirit. The next thing that Billy talks about is called the value. The value is the product of a thought process. That's what's handed over to the spirit, and he calls it as an instrument. And this thought process that we hand over to the spirit produces a strength, and it's based on newly gained knowledge and produces a corresponding effect in the spirit. Consequently, the new thought represents the value or a new programming. This serves as a guide for the spirit. So as the spiritual self begins to concentrate on this new thought and matures, it finds a new value within itself. So we don't want to feed the spirit a bunch of trash and rubbish, do we? You know, the purpose here is to like get ourselves in balance. So we don't want to send it all the same junk that's in our material self to begin with. True wisdom only recognizes such matters which are carefully tested by attention and never gets confused, because wisdom only acknowledges absolute logic. That's what truth is. The object to be observed requires extremely careful preparation and cleansing. This object, our package of cigarettes, will begin to speak for itself, and don't interrupt that with your own ideas or judgments, because as you stare and concentrate on this package of cigarettes, and at this point we're going to do nothing. We're not going to move, use our hands or anything. We're just going to look at it. and we're going to go totally blank as far as any material knowledge we have about that product whatsoever. The idea is that as we strictly observe it with our eyes and concentrate totally on the package of cigarettes, the package of cigarettes will begin to reveal itself. And you'll find that suddenly you'll have a knowing and a knowledge totally about every detail of that package, but it'll be much different than your normal material viewpoints on that package. You probably won't even see it as something to smoke. You'll have no connection to your lungs or to your mind or to pleasure or to eating or to your girlfriend or anything. You will develop a very clear, precise, clear observation of that package of cigarettes and see it just exactly as what it is, just simply a material object. And then after it is presented itself, it will speak up about itself through clear observation. That information is passed on to the spirit, and the spirit then has real, factual, absolute logic about a package of cigarettes, which is unattached with any of your material ideas and judgments about that. Every time you clearly observe something, now we're picking on a package of cigarettes, it could be more fascinating to observe an animal, say your cat, fish, or a dog you may have, or even a person. Go to a park and study a person. Every time you do that, it's fascinating. I've done that many times. I'll go sit in a park and watch people. I get such a kick out of looking at people because when I observe them and just clearly observe them from strictly an observation viewpoint without interjecting any outside influences of my own, no value judgments, no emotions about it. I just look at them as human beings, as spirit objects, and see, you get all these new insights. Every person is projecting these beautiful new ideas about themselves. You see the way they walk, the way they talk, the way they maybe play in the grass, the way they smile, the way they comb their hair and the clothes they wear. But you just observe these things without making any judgment about it. And you get these really neat insights into life. And suddenly you feel a real closeness and connection to that person, but you don't know them materially. But you're getting to know them spiritually. You start to make a connection subconsciously. There's a great connection. It's loving. It's the basis for what universal love is. And you'd have an understanding now with a person. You know this person spiritually, and you've never met them. And you have formed no material ideas or connection to them. You can then send those feelings on into your spirit, because your spirit's open for business all the time. And you will feel yourself develop in power personally. Okay. In his book, Billy has an example. I'm using a cigarette package, and he uses a rose. He talks about how to take something as common as a rose and observe that. And notice right away that your first impression is what's called a sight impression. You already have preconceived ideas about a rose and what it is, right? And you'll notice right away that this current knowledge, this inventory of facts about a rose, jump to the forefront of your thoughts. Well, dash them out. Just push them out of the way and see it for exactly for what it is. Go through the steps of observation. First, you only see a color. And after you observe the color, as you continue observing it, you'll notice that there is form to it. The rose will speak out to you. The rose will show its shape. The rose will show its petals. It will show each little intricate part of itself will suddenly become aware to you because you're observing it clearly and keenly. There will be an entire succession of observations, a very small detail, that in very rapid succession will form a keen observation from all sides of this rose. And you develop a practice or an exercise of seeing things clearly. This exercise and this practice of that will become part of you. Once it becomes part of you, you've developed a new way of seeing things. You've developed a way of turning off the normal material things, the material ways that we normally check things out. And now we're developing a way that through a meditative exercise, a simple practice of mind control, to be able to observe something spiritually and see it with your spirit clearly and let your spirit feel all that new information. And it's amazing how strong it gets. It's amazing how your spirit reacts to the beauties in nature and into life and how it affects you. You are beginning to do what's called forming the Spirit. Forming the Spirit is the development of the spiritual power that's within you, using your spiritual self to interface with the world instead of strictly your material self. You know, most of the problems of the world would probably go away. We wouldn't have all this conscious evil and wickedness in our world if it wasn't for thoughtlessness, loss of self-control, making quick decisions, carelessness, and so forth. A single brief moment of reflection in most cases would prevent a catastrophe or a feeling of guilt or other problem or sorrow in life. Just being able to stop and go through the exercises of clearly observing things, of learning to pause just for a brief moment. People aren't used to doing this. They're usually, you know, in a hurry and so forth. But an important thing to remember here is that if time is one, all is one. And I was just rambling on here about a phrase that Billy uses, which is, if time is one, all is one. And here he's talking about being able to seize the moment, to view life exactly what's going on right now. Not be dwelling on the past or thinking about the future when you're, you know, supposed to be paying attention to what's happening at the moment. Because the point he's making here is he wants you to learn when you're out in life to be able to pause just for a moment. Once you've learned to actually keenly observe things and see things for what they are, amazing what happens. And then if you can learn to pause just at the point when you're getting to react to something, well, a very amazing thing happens. When you can pause just for a flash second and kick into gear your abilities of clean observation to see things really the way that they are, a lot of amazing things happen. When you do that, you seem to grasp everything all at once. So through pure observation, we're going to learn to pause precisely at the moment, which allows us to grasp everything and see it clearly and detain the observation just for an instant when the Spirit itself is still kind of plastic and molding and not committed to a fixed idea. Because we're getting ready. Like I say, the Spirit is open for business all the time. It's listening to all of your thoughts. So if we begin to pause and so forth, and while we're actually observing something and see it clearly, then we have a chance to see things the way they really are. This slows down the pure observation, of course, but it gives you time to form the active behavior that the Spirit is going to develop based on your new observations, your new knowledge. You can prevent hastiness of word and deed through the moment of pause. How many times have you done something a little too quickly and you had to repeat yourself real fast because you just suddenly, just as you said it, you knew it was wrong, so you say it again? I find myself when I'm speaking sometimes, I get going real fast and I'm thinking about 2 or 3 minutes ahead of where I'm going and I'm forming visions and ideas of what I want to talk about. And a couple of times I've just forgotten what I was saying at the moment. I get so caught up with what I'm going to talk about next, I just get totally lost. Well, or if you have a case where you've been to a party, or for if you drink or whatever, and you've had occasion where you've said things you didn't really mean, and you woke up in the morning finding it necessary to call a friend and apologize or explain yourself or something. Well, drinking, for one thing, isn't good for you at all, but if you were to say things that you didn't mean even without the alcohol, a moment of pause could have prevented that. In a business meeting or working with, you know, in your day-to-day environment, if we learn to pause and just for a second clearly observe what's going on, to seize that moment, freeze it in time, just for a part second, and draw upon our spiritual self, draw upon the ability of our spirit to feed us wisdom, you can do that. And that's what meditation is going to help you do. You're going to learn where all the parts of yourself are, how to actually identify and feel and use your spiritual self. And it's really quite simple. Within a day or so, you'll be doing things and you'll be telling your friends all about it, and you know, you'll be surprised how strong you actually really are. Okay. Once you've done that, though, once you slow down and pause and so forth, this causes the spirit to become a little more flexible and approachable, because you got a little time here, you got a part second. This causes it to grow in strength and awareness. It's got more time to observe. It's got more time to actually give you a feeling of wisdom that you can actually use to observe with, causing undesired and unwise reactions to become less of a habit. Okay? It gets easier all the time. You now have time to properly make a decision. Your decision will not be based on any preconceived religious or belief structure overtones. It'll no longer be based on what someone else said or what you thought about something. It's no longer based on any kind of belief structure or concept or idea, whatever. But it's entirely then, your observation is entirely based upon a true observation of that object, be it a person, an idea, a thought, or whatever it is. And then your spirit begins to grow because it's truthful. You're feeding your spirit wisdom. It knows when you've observed something correctly. Because don't take your subconscious and your spiritual subconscious for granted. It's awfully intelligent. In most cases, it's smarter than you are, which is kind of a strange thing because your material mind is so busy being intelligent, being cool, and doing what it thinks is right. It most of the time does not see things as clearly or have a clear enough understanding, as clear of an understanding of the world as your spiritual subconscious, which is a collection of all of your wisdom from previous lives. All that information's in there. It sees things clearly. It's not illogical like the material mind is. So that's what I mean by your spiritual self is generally more intelligent than your material self. You know, when you do something and you get a little hunch, a feeling that you should do something, that's the beginning of your spiritual subconscious feeding you information. And for those of you who are used to paying attention to hunches, the little voice that perks up just at that flash second when an idea pops into your head, for those of you who have learned to entertain that and allow that hunch to rush in for a second, you have found out, like I have and many others have, that almost all the time is the correct thing to do. That's great advice coming from yourself. It's not coming from any outside source. There's no mystical revelation going on here. That's just your spiritual self trying to get through your hard head. It's trying to get through all of your material self and give you some advice. Now let it come in. Your new powers of pure observation, then see matters of the future approach. Let them slip into the present. Without holding on to them, let them slip right into the past. The point is, don't spend any time dwelling on the past. Don't sit around saying, you know, wasting your time and energy worrying about what happened, you know, oh, gee, I didn't do this right, or I'm worried about that. It's a total waste of time. Get back to the philosophy that if time is one, all is one. Learn to live in the moment, observing the exact moment. If you concentrate on the past and your worries, then that's who you're going to be. And that's how you're going to react to things. If you concentrate on the present, on the exact present, then you always know that you're creating a new future. You can create new thoughts. You're not hampered by old worries and fears and ideas and so forth. You can then plan for the future using the continuous evolution of the spirit. You'll also find out something else, which is amazing. How many of you really understand how much of the future your subconscious knows about? If you allow your spiritual subconscious to come forward, you actually tell it to do that. Tell it to come forward and let you know about what it's planning for your future. Your conscious mind then can get in connection to your subconscious. Introduce the two of them. Hello, conscious, this is my subconscious. Get together here and talk things over. You'll be amazed to find out that your material self spends a lot of time in the past dwelling over your problems, fears, and worries, while your spiritual subconscious is very busy in there mapping out the next few days. It's planning out a future. And your conscious mind and most people have no idea what's going on in there. Okay, so learn to be in the present. There's great freedom in there. And learn to, through your meditative exercises, which we're going to talk about, get into using your spiritual self and looking into that future. Now, this is one of the problems with religion. Religion doesn't want you so much to think about the present, but they continually are telling people all the time to go do whatever you want to do, and it's God's will, and everything is just everything is based upon the afterlife. But don't worry about this life. Everything's going to be in the kingdom of heaven later on. They don't want you taking responsibility for your own life. They don't want you using your spirit. They don't want you to discover how powerful an individual you can be once you are using your own spirit and are connected to creation yourself. Okay? Daydreams are an interesting thing. When it comes to meditation, they're a real obstacle. They get in the way because they affect concentration. Because daydreams are, you know, we manufacture those out of all of our little daily problems and material things. They're a lot of fun and they're useful in some areas, but if you find yourself daydreaming when you begin to meditate, dash it out. Stop them and get yourself concentrated back on what you're doing. Because it's the development of the exercise of meditation which leads to a forming of the spirit, which produces the power. The forming of the spirit is forming an idea clearly and strongly that the spirit itself attaches itself to, and you become strong then. When you purely observe yourself, you begin to see all of your thoughts. The strong points, the weak points, the indicators of who you are, then you can do something about changing these thoughts within yourself. You're going to learn how to do that also. It'll just come to you. See, the pure observation supports the noble and the positive forces of the individual's inner being and brings them to full consciousness. Your self-reliance will be greatly strengthened once you clearly start observing yourself and learn to change your pre-programming, your material emotions and attitudes and feelings. You can change those through the use of your spiritual self. So the simple idea of powerful powerlessness is an effective factor in the formation of a well-balanced material conscious. See, a balance is an equal balance between material self and spiritual self, where we go through life, you know, using our material self, which we obviously do to gather information and form logical patterns and so forth, but we should have to get in the habit of balancing that out with consulting and using our spiritual self all the time for wisdom and for growth. Talk just for a minute here about spirit liberation. It's a phrase that Billy uses in his book. And it's referring to actually liberating the spirit from illogical thinking. And that's his view of what most of us are doing all the time, that we go through our daily life and our material world doing things, you know, the way we were trained, observing the world the way we're shown to and the way we're practicing. And we live, especially if you live in a big area like L.A., in order to defend yourself, you develop a lot of habits, attitudes, and emotions about the area that you live. Women, unfortunately, have to protect themselves quite often from unusual characters making advancing to them. Women seldom will smile back in another car or whatever because they don't want you following some guy following them home. And it's just not a safe world, and that's quite unfortunate. But you can't blame them for pulling into themselves and hiding that way. But it's an illogical world that we live in. Things aren't done for the right reasons. They're done for money, power, greed, control over another individual. In very few places do you find where the world's actually operating on the wisdom system, where people are living by the spiritual logic of the creation. You don't find that in too many places. So spirit liberation is actually liberating your spirit from having to live in illogical thinking. You know, if you make a real effort to purely observe human beings, animals, plants, and different events and so forth, you're going to find a great change in your life. There will be a development of harmony within your life. You'll start walking around with a feeling of comfort and of freedom. You'll feel protected from the external environment and its impure logic. By acting towards your fellow man through pure observation, you'll now see him as a spirit full of love and hope traveling on his own path of evolution. Not that he's competing with you, interfering with you, and getting in the way of your life, which is materially how we generally think. We pass judgment right away on people when we see them. Women immediately react whether or not that they're interested. A man does the same thing. He sees a woman all too frequently just as a sex object or what he can get. I mean, not all people are like that, but most. And that happens all too often, unfortunately, in our society. We see animals sometimes as things to get out of the way, things to eat, things to kill, whatever. We're ruining our planet. We're ruining our oceans because of no respect. We don't observe it as a spiritual thing. We're damaging the planet because we have no respect for the planet whatsoever. We do not see that as part of creation. We don't see that as a spiritual thing. Meditation will teach us. It will, if you meditate properly, we could cure most of the problems of the world, because through meditation, you cannot observe things that way. When you meditate clearly and cleanly, you see things exactly as they are. You see an ocean and an animal and a human being and a plant and a tree exactly for what they are, spiritual things within creation. And then your attitude about them is totally different. And once you develop that habit, you start forming more power of the spirit. The power comes from the fact that your spirit then rises up in its force and its ability to interface with your life. You find yourself using your spiritual awareness of things more and more, your spiritual abilities to observe, and you draw off of your maximum wisdom available. Okay? The last thing I want to talk about as far as the philosophy here, and then we'll go through some meditative exercises, is what Billy calls the clarity of knowledge. Through the clarity of knowledge in meditation, the individual now enters the realm of teaching himself. This means that the meditative exercise can be introduced into the daily life so that you can use your new ability to see things clearly in conjunction with the daily process of actions of words and deeds. And we've talked about that already, how we can become a balanced individual where we don't see things as negative or positive. We see things from a more balanced viewpoint, a neutral viewpoint by virtue of our keen observation. We are beginning to balance out ourselves so we are living our life as a material person, but we're also using our spirit. You can begin to teach yourself new ways to react in the material world through these new knowledges you're learning about through your spirit. You'll keep the meditative exercise kind of always ready. It's always kind of on call and on hand, so you can call upon it anytime you want to facilitate yourself during the daily life. Remember the pause? If you want to have some fun the next few days, just teach yourself to pause. Like every hour on the hour, pause for 20 seconds and observe exactly what's going on around you. Just observe. Don't make any judgments or any opinions. Just observe things, Spock-like, see things like a microscope exactly as they are, okay? Through extremely clear knowledge, brought on by pure observation, there's a slow breakdown in the delusion of ego. You'll see the world a lot clearer. You begin to create a new way of thinking which uses your wisdom. Final thought here, the meditation method has three basic steps to it. And the first steps are is finding applications for yourself. The meditative exercises are primarily for yourself, one, to develop the knowledge and so forth of your spirit, to learn to use the force of your spirit, to learn through the meditative exercise how to observe things clearly. But those are all things about the self, right? They're all me, me, I. The second thing you need to do is spread out at a later date after you've accomplished those levels of understanding and spread out and start applying these principles to other people. Observe other people and how they react and learn to observe other things without your own influences, without your own ideas, to be an observer of the outside world, okay? And finally, you find applications where both are involved, where you see applications where you personally are interfacing with the outside world and you observe that. The reason is that this three-part rhythm is so important because all partialities, imperfections, dangers of exclusive introversion or extroversion of the consciousness will be avoided. So we want to be careful of turning our conscious thoughts inward or outward on purpose. By that I mean is, it's possible that you can create what's called euphoric meditation. And the three-part meditative exercise is kind of like a checklist, and that helps you avoid that. Euphoric meditation is kind of it's a process that you can fall into causing illusions, can be dangerous to yourself. For instance, if you engage in pure introversion, turning inward, purely inward, you will have what are called euphoric hallucinations. They appear. They build themselves up and become illusions, and then you begin to lose the sense of reality. You can no longer make a free decision then when that happens. Your introversion will be connected with desires and pleasures, and you create like a mania and you lose reality. This is what people do when they channel, unfortunately. See, refer back again to our little drawing of the material side and the spiritual side, and what I told you earlier. What channeling is when a person begins to meditate, and they allow their ego to become involved, and without even being aware of it, their psyche, which contains their feelings and thinkings and so forth, then produces a hallucination, and they're not even aware where this is coming from. Out of this, because of their ego, which can be subconscious desires to be liked, wanted, or whatever, the meditation never gets deep enough, immerses deep enough, and becomes clear enough where it gets into the spirit. It never becomes part of the spiritual self. The meditation strictly is called euphoric because it goes straight into your material side only. And your material side will then, your subconscious along with your psyche, will create an hallucination. You don't know where it's from. Because you're so anxious for something like this to happen, the individual goes along with it and immediately says, wow, this is terrific. You know, I'm in touch with something. Must be a higher self. Must have been a great king from Egypt. Surely it was probably me in a former life. And pretty soon we have someone channeling. Channeling is total fake. It is the development of the self. And it is a path you go on where you are steered improperly in meditation. The correct way to get in touch with other beings is, as we talked about earlier, is to use the meditation to properly become immersed in a meditative immersion, getting in touch with your spiritual self, and using spiritual telepathy to do that, the we form. Then there's no trance needed. There's no hallucination. There's no voices coming out claiming that it's the King Farouk or whatever. And then there's no danger of us, you know, losing touch with our reality. I've seen many people who have learned to channel and do things have come to these realizations on their own, that it's a dangerous path we tread on when we start to meditate if we do not understand the proper principles of the mind and how the spirit works. That's why I went to some trouble of explaining this, because I'd feel very sad if some of you went out and began to meditate without understanding the mechanics really of how mind and spirit work, and you were misled and started creating your own illusions or delusions of yourself. True meditation is pure observation without desire. Desire is what gets into our material side and causes our meditation to become euphoric. Meditation that's guided by our own desires then creates these illusions. It is the purest means of true recognition and does not contain any matters which are based on wish fulfillments or hallucinations. That's what true meditation actually is. True meditation is founded on pure truth, pure knowledge, pure recognition, pure observation, and clear sight. Clearly seeing what it is and letting it speak to you without influence of your desires. All right, I think now we're ready to discuss a couple of things. One, a meditative exercise on how we can begin to develop our meditative technique. And then we'll also discuss a little bit an actual meditative immersion technique that Billy uses and teaches to his own group members. For the use of our meditative exercise, we're going to use a very common method used by many different forms of meditation, which is the idea of concentrating on our own respiration or our own breath. This is a very simple way to do it, and it's also a very good way to do it because the respiration is a part of the life form and is a very important factor. And by concentrating on your own breath, you immediately become aware of the transience of your own life. There's an immediate feeling of kind of calm and security and well-being when you do that. So I'm going to explain exactly how that works and how you can do it. In order to concentrate on your breathing, which is a very simple method of initial concentration, using the lotus method of sitting with your legs crossed is a very popular way of doing that. However, that's for people that are used to doing that. I know here in the Western world, most people aren't used to sitting in that position. It's very uncomfortable for them, so the exercise really wouldn't be possible. So if you need to, you might be able to just sit in a chair or get into a relaxed state somewhere. Any position where it's quiet, get rid of any extraneous clothing, jewelry, hats, or whatever you may have on that may draw your attention to them or make noise. Okay. And what we'll do is we'll begin now. Let's say we're going to do this sitting in a chair, a very comfortable chair, with your arms down on the sides of each chair. And we're now going to take three deep breaths. And when we take each breath, we do this very slowly. We pull the breath in, and then we hold it, and very slowly let it out. Let it out all the way, so your lungs are completely exhausted of air. And then repeat that again. Do that three times. This will begin to relax the body right away. Simple breathing thing you can do any time of the day if you feel any kind of stress at all. Just stop and take three deep breaths and you'll immediately feel a little bit better. Okay, now what we're going to do though is we're going to concentrate on the breath as it goes in and out of our nasal passages. Because it's doing that all of the time. This is part, like I say, of our life force. And it's a very good thing to concentrate on. So to begin with, after taking your three breaths, let's now begin to concentrate on the breath moving in and out of the nasal passages. As you start to do that, you'll notice right away that it's kind of a cooling sensation, that once you start paying attention to the breath going in and out, that suddenly you notice it's kind of cool, and that it actually flows in right along the sides of your nose, right in the middle, and that it moves up the side of your nose and disappears up into the top of your nose back into your body. Don't follow it any farther than that. We only want to observe the breath just as it flows in the beginning stages when it hits the nasal side of the nasal wall, the middle section when it rolls up the side of the nasal wall, and the end of the breath as it disappears back into the body. Okay, remember, do not follow it any farther than that. When you first start doing this, for most people, the first thing that will happen is that you'll find yourself immediately getting involved in your breath control, and your breath speeds up or your body jerks a little something. It's perfectly normal. It takes a little practice to get used to the idea of observing your breath. And by observing, I mean not taking part in it. We're just going to observe your breath going in and out of your nose, and we're going to literally concentrate just on that observation and not take any part of it. Remember, this is just an exercise for practice. It'll take some time. You don't want to cheat. No point in that. And don't force it. It takes a while for this to start happening. After a while, what we're working on is to be able to concentrate just on our breath and to push out any other kinds of thoughts at all that may come into our mind and hold them out. And be able to concentrate on our breath, say, for maybe 10 minutes. In order to do that, you're going to find it more difficult than you think because it's very hard to keep thoughts out. It's also very hard to actually develop the concentration observation of the breath. Remember what we talked about in observation? We're going to observe it and not get involved in it. We're an observer of the breath. So you can almost see yourself like inside of your nose just watching the breath roll in and out. There are three stages to your breath: the beginning, middle, and end. The beginning as the breath actually enters the nasal passage, the middle as it sweeps up the side of your nasal passage, in the end, when it actually disappears off into your body. As you continue to observe, you will notice that there are three clear stages. You very clearly will begin to observe the beginning stage, then the middle stage, and then the ending stage. And after concentration becomes even better, you'll start to notice the beginning and end of each stage. You'll catch the breath just as it come in, and you'll catch the ending of the beginning stage. And then you notice the beginning of the middle stage, where the air actually goes right up the side of the nasal passage. And then you'll observe the ending of this middle phase as the breath moves up the side of your nasal passage. And then you'll begin to notice the beginning of the final stage of your breath as it begins to move into your body. And then you'll notice the ending of that stage as the breath actually moves into the body. Continued concentration on this will begin to even these three stages out, where the three stages then will be about the same amount of time and duration, and we'll have about the same amount of observation attached to them. And this is what we're working on. We want to get to the point where the three stages of the breathing become even and get rid of all of the unrest of the body. You will no longer have awareness of the body. Some people start doing this and it'll come so easy to them that 10, 15, 20 minutes will slide right by and they don't really even notice it. But the most important thing is to be able to observe without getting involved, without controlling our breath, observe the stages of the breath going in and out, and observe, if you want to, just your feelings a little bit, how calm you feel. You'll notice that the first time you try it. It's a great way to relax if you're stressed, like on the freeway in traffic. Just for a second, just start noticing your breathing, and you'll notice how quickly you can actually calm down and become less stressful. When you get very good at this, your concentration will develop to the point where for several minutes no unwanted thoughts come in. You have no thoughts whatsoever. All you're doing is observing the breath. At that particular point, when you get deeper immersed into this exercise, you'll see that we have our eyes closed, by the way, if possible here, if you want to try this. It's easier that way. Don't do that on the freeway, though. What will happen is when you get deeper immersed in this, kind of a bright spot or a sohar of light will begin to appear in your eyes. This is like a light of enlightenment, and this is indicative of the fact that you are beginning to sense the spiritual plane. If other images appear, like visions or ideas, then this is not a success. This is self-suggestion, and this is the beginning of euphoric meditation that we want to watch out for. So if other images, stories, daydreams start to appear, just dash those out. We don't want those. Those are unwanted things. This is not progress at all. If after a thorough exercise, a deep exercise is obtained, you should immediately engage in a clear sight observation to find out the full benefit of this, which means that you would entertain the thought that has come to you, if a deep feeling of some kind comes out of that, you want to reflect on for that for a while and look for the real meaning of that, because things will start coming out of your spirit and appearing as you begin this exercise. But that's the first exercise. I would say that you would practice that every day, two or three times a day, maybe for 5 minutes each, and do that for a couple of weeks to the point where it gets very easy to concentrate, where you can immediately concentrate on your breathing with no problem, where the three stages of the breathing become very clear to you, and where hopefully some sort of deep concentration begins, where you begin to see this Sohar light which just naturally appears in your eyes. Okay? One thing that should be made clear at the close of this breathing exercise, this breathing observation exercise, something you should know about, that you can make progress at this anytime you want to. It's just necessary for you to remain alert, remain honest with yourself, and don't try to cheat. Block out any unwanted visions and so forth. You cannot come to any harm to this unless you allow these self-suggestive illusions and things that appear to get the better of you. Don't follow them. However, anyone who preserves his moral mental equilibrium and does this the way that you're instructed here by keeping your mind clear, there's absolutely no danger at all whatsoever in here. The first signs of success during meditative exercise is the occurrence of very vague and at first incoherent forms of dream images in the waking state without the meditation person concentrating upon such images or wishing to see them. So after you've done a breathing exercise and you get a deep thing, in the waking state, in your conscious mind, you begin to see some sort of incoherent forms or dream images. These images are first forms of beginning meditation immersion. They distinguish themselves unmistakably from a normal dream image by their very extreme clarity and distinctness. If the meditative exercise is handled properly, the images do not exhibit any power of suggestion and gradually begin to link up with logical forms. Though in the beginning, though, it's only very loosely, but in the end they generally reveal the whole course of an event. You see, these events are conditions generally of the past, present, or the future, whereby these are not coded in any sort of symbolism as in the case of a normal dream. Dreams are generally symbols of ideas and things that you're working out and aren't accurate. But these are very clear sight visions of a past, present, or future. The waking state dream images of the meditation are clear and very distinct. They always show events in their order of development, which is another key. This enables the meditating individual to recognize the events very clearly, but the task still remains to examine, by the way of new meditative occurrences, the period and their connections, what they're really all about. So you will experience, once you begin to practice your exercise and get deeper and deeper into it, once that's over, during your normal waking state material consciousness, you'll start to get dream images that are kind of incoherent, and you can't seem to connect them. But they will just keep coming stronger. This is your spirit beginning to show you things. You're beginning to get in touch with different knowledges of your spirit from the past, present, and the future. The investigation of these events released by your waking state dreams prove extremely difficult and laborious. If you have to have a good place to do this. If you're in the everyday world with billions of people, if you're in a high population area, it's almost impossible with all these billions of people and their trains of thoughts. So you need to find an isolated area, and generally a pyramid is required in order to do this, to isolate outside influences of thought. If you use a pyramid, it has to be of exact measurements and form. As a matter of fact, if you have access to the exact measurements and form of the Great Pyramid Giza, that's the ones to use. The pyramid should also include kind of a vibration in a very definite direction, where you point that to a certain area north, and you'll learn all about that in the pyramid book. If you begin to meditate and you achieve these very first successes in the breathing exercise and it gets deep, the appearance of the waking state dreams then indicate that it's time for you to learn the actual immersion techniques and the colors that go with it so you can develop even farther. Basically, this meditation exercise we've been talking about is a rule of relaxation, and it's a very standard way of doing things. But there are other ways to do it. Once you've done that, we're no longer going to pay any attention to the breath. We're now going to develop a different meditative immersion technique using color. And this can be done basically just lying down where you flatten yourself out, loosen up and relax the body very well. Close your eyes, loosen up, and relax. Again, breathe deeply in and out three times, just like we did before. This time, however, we're going to start forming definite thoughts, definite objects of our meditation that we're going to use. The object of our meditation may be to stop smoking, for instance, and the secondary object may be to link to happier times or link to a future time when you don't smoke and see yourself very happy. So we have a definite object in mind that we want to accomplish through the meditation. In contrast to the breathing meditation exercise, another process, this meditative immersion process, is dealing with color. This way, the observation is no longer turned towards your breathing, but it has to be now directed towards your eyes, the back of your eyes once they're closed, so you can concentrate on the colors as the colors appear. The concentration then comes in the form of practicing and carrying out this concentration on these colors. That means the knowledge about the existence of the colors is present, which I'll go over now. You're going to understand the colors. You're not going to force the colors to come in. They naturally will come in based on the depth of immersion of your meditation. The depth of the immersion of your meditation, of course, is dependent upon your ability to concentrate and see a single thing, or concentrate on an object or a thought. Okay, that's what we did in our breathing practice. That's what we practiced on. See, in this way, you simply know that the colors exist, but you don't have to do anything to manufacture them or cause them actually to come into your attention. Okay, the standard colors of meditative immersion consist of the tones blue, green, yellow, and red. Blue will first come in when we start the immersion technique. The first thing that will come in is the color blue. This represents the color of the presence, the life, and of your own existence. It's a very natural thing. It will just naturally come to the back of your eyes. The next color that will come is green, and that means that you're getting deeper into the meditation. This represents the color of the beginning change from the conscious into your subconscious. You're shutting down your conscious self. You're getting into your subconscious, as well as the beginning of the change from the present, moving into the past or possibly into the future. The third color is yellow. This represents the color of the concluded change from the conscious to the unconscious. So when the color yellow appears, you know, it's kind of like an elevator. You know how deep you are into the consciousness. Excuse me, into your meditative immersion. Okay. So when the color yellow comes along, you know that by now you have slipped from your conscious state into your subconscious state, and you've concluded the change from the present. You are now drifting. You're no longer concentrating on the moment. You're drifting either into the future or back into the past. The color red represents the color of penetration into the unconscious, or penetration into the past or the future. So it's a gradual transition through these colors. The colors come naturally, and by virtue of knowing what the colors represent, you then are aware of how deep you are into this immersion. And this, of course, takes quite a bit of practice. It may take months for you to actually cause all this to happen. It is necessary that you do this on a regular and timely basis. If you only do it sporadically, you cannot really, hope to achieve hardly any successes whatsoever. So it's necessary, if you're going to practice doing this, do it daily, set aside an exact time to start doing it, and put so much effort into it every day, so that you actually, get some benefit out of it. So the colors blue, green, yellow, and red are responsible or indicative of the meditative immersion. Use the same colors also in returning. If the colors are employed in the sequence that we just talked about, green, yellow, red, then when you come out of this, you'll also do the same thing in reverse. You would go red, yellow, green, blue. And you're setting yourself up and telling yourself these are what the colors represent, and that's what will happen. So our actual process of meditation immersion then is done like this. First of all, I would not use any music or anything distracting, because we want to concentrate on what we're doing. This isn't a relaxation technique at this point. We're beginning to actually immerse ourselves into spirit and to start doing things with our spirit. So get in an absolutely quiet place. Hopefully, if you even had a pyramid or bought one, you could do that and lay down flat with your body loosened up and totally relaxed with your arms at your side. Close your eyes, loosen up and relax. Breathe deeply in and out three times, very deep breaths, and let the breath totally all the way out so your body relaxes. Then you begin to concentrate your thoughts and remembering your primary goal of determination, what you're going to do when you go into this. Keep your two goals in mind. You have a primary goal and a secondary goal. Okay? once you've got the thoughts, you know, remind yourself of what your thoughts are going to be, your purpose for meditation, the object of what your meditation is about, then just drop that from your thoughts. You no longer concentrate on that. You then begin to just concentrate with your eyes, watching the back of your eyelids. And just allow yourself to drift away. By that I mean exclude all unwanted thoughts and feelings and so forth, and concentrate just totally on the color in front of your eyes. Within a very short time, once all unwanted thoughts are gone and you are completely relaxed, a blue color will slowly come into place. If the blue color does appear, concentrate then on your secondary goal determination, and let it deeply penetrate into yourself. Our secondary goal then was to see, or look into the future and see ourselves as a happy person, not smoking. Okay? When that blue color comes along, we're going to concentrate on it three times. It'll kind of pulsate. It'll get very strong once in blue, and then it'll come back and it'll get strong again. Let that happen three times with this blue color as it comes in. Okay? Once that happens, if the method of immersion, if your meditative immersion continues, the green color will slowly come in. And if the color blue has appeared, then a threefold concentration on the color green will follow right after that. Okay? After that, there's also this inward concentration will take place again, where once again you will feel and get images about your secondary goal. These images will start coming to you. If the color green has appeared three times, if it'll actually go through these three phases of deep green coming in, then a threefold concentration on the color yellow is brought about automatically. It automatically comes into play. You don't cause it to happen. You just observe the yellow coming in, and your vision then goes totally yellow three times very strongly. If the color yellow has appeared three times, the next thing is the concentration on the color red will come about at some point when you get good enough at it. If this color appears, you have drifted even deeper and deeper, and that's as deep as you can go when the color red comes in. With practice over a period of years, a number of things are obtained. You will learn a symbol language that will come to you. Your spirit then will be able to develop very strongly, where telekinetic powers will come about, where you can move things, levitation, telepathy gets very strong, spiritual telepathy and primary telepathy. You'll be able then through these methods to find the symbols and keys to the symbol language and have access to the Akashic records like we talked about before. But most importantly, you can use this as a balancing factor in your life to keep yourself balanced between the material and spiritual self. You will also have then first-hand real truth about life. You will no longer have any fear of the death cycle whatsoever, because you will then have absolute certainty of the spiritual self that you are, knowing that you will move forward. Knowledge of creation then becomes yours. Power of creation then becomes yours. After a period of time, the color red will gradually become like a veil of mist. And this is where the waking state images begin to manifest themselves. They're always in accordance, though, in the forms of with a goal determination, because you've done some pre-programming. So these images, these waking state images that will come to you, will be, you know, responses or information about whatever the goal was that you went in with. In contrast to sleeping state images, again, the waking state images remain extremely constant. Means they don't grow hazy, they don't fall into oblivion like sleeping state images, like dreams do. Because of their extreme clarity and appearance, they remain very powerful, they're very vivid, and they can, at a later time, after the meditative immersion, after you've come out of it, they can be processed further by the material conscious mind in connection with the unconscious, because your spiritual unconscious will send impulse information to your material conscious mind in connection with the images that you have seen. And then you can draw conclusions from that and information will come to you. When you are ready to come out of the meditative immersion, the return is just in reverse of how you got in. If the colors blue, green, yellow, and red are used as a meditative immersion technique, then they will also serve as a reverse sequence to come out. And then you would go through the same process to return, seeing red again three times, then yellow, then green, and then blue as you come out. A simple thought impulse will be sufficient to initiate the return movement of the colors for the return into the realm of the material conscious mind. Consequently, there's never any danger of remaining in this concentrative meditative immersion. You're not lost off anyplace. It's always very simple to direct yourself, and in some cases, though, time may fly by. You may stay in a meditative immersion longer than you think. It's not uncommon for people to come out and be surprised that they've, you know, been meditating for an hour or two. So it's common, especially at Billy's house, that they have a schedule and they always have someone watch. They wait outside the pyramid when a person's in meditation so that they don't stay in too long. Well, this is a basic explanation then of the concept of meditation. And I went to a lot of trouble, hopefully, to try to explain a little bit about it psychologically so you understand what the mind is actually doing and so that you can learn to meditate clearly without creating any hallucinations or adding on to our already big egos that we have. And you've got an exercise that you can practice, and you've got an immersion technique that you can use. There are many immersion techniques in the world. This is a very simple, straightforward one that does not require that you attach yourself to any belief structure or philosophy, so I suggest it's a good place for you to start. Of course, on your own, you will learn many things and many different things that go on within your own spirit. The book, The Meditation, is not available out there, so if you have any other questions on it, you could probably write to me or whatever, and possibly in the future I may be able to get the book even on the market, so good luck with your meditating. Meditation is becoming an exercise of how to think. Okay.